Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Upon further review, what was the signature play or moment that will be remembered from Super Bowl 53? What, if anything, will be talked about when this game is mentioned?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go back to the idea that this is an awful game. This was not a good football game. I went back and watched it. It was a non-action game. I get it. There was great defense played, and you know, the throwback to the 1980s style football was interesting. But it was not – there were a lot of missed moments. You know, Goff had a bad game. Oh, my goodness gracious. He's got a guy wide open in the end zone, and he just couldn't pull the trigger, and he just didn't get the ball there on time, and that breaks up a potential touchdown. They could have gone up 7-3. That would have been a much more interesting game to watch the end of it. But I guess the signature play, the play that we'll go back to, is Tom Brady – throwing the 29-yard pass to Gronk. You know, that drive, the game-winning drive, the end of the game, where the only time either team got in the red zone, the throw by Brady was unbelievable, and the catch by Gronkowski was equally good. And I think when they show highlights of Tom, when they show highlights of the Patriots, that will be the inclusion play from that game. But there were not many. Weren't many signature moments.
I mean, the Super Bowl 53 highlight video is going to include the coin flip. I mean, that's how dull this game was.
You know, we never talked about that, David. What the hell are you doing giving them the ball? Yeah. Didn't we discuss that?
We did discuss that.
You gave them exactly what they wanted.
I thought that they did not listen to you.
I know. They threw a pick. I know.
What the heck?
But they still ate time. They still took your team off the field for too long.
But there were so few signature plays. I mean, so first of all, when you look back at this game and when you talk about Super Bowl 53, what you're going to think about when the game is mentioned is the brilliance of Bill Belichick. This is the game that will go down as the one that he outcoached the boy genius, the boy wonder. And that's not necessarily fair to Sean McVay, who did a great job in getting the Rams to the point where they're Super Bowl contenders in 2 years. That, you know, you look at what he's done. I think maybe we all yesterday did a disservice to Sean McVay and how capable he really is of being a good head coach in the NFL. That said, he was pantsed in the Super Bowl, and you're going to remember the Super Bowl for that very reason. The signature play, to me, because it was a defensive effort, because it was a defensive football game, Stephon Gilmore's pick of Jared Goff's duck. That was a terrible throw. It underscored and represented everything about the Patriots' dominance. They confused Jared Goff. He was not sharp. He was tentative, and he wasn't accurate, and he missed open receivers. And Stephon Gilmore picked off that pass, and it said everything about it. He said it was the easiest interception he had all year. It looked like it. And that, to me, said everything about the defensive dominance that the Patriots had against the Rams.
What a forgettable Super Bowl. The game, commercials, halftime, just everything. We probably were due for a dud here, though, coming off the last couple of years. But
last couple of weeks. I mean,
yeah,
how about that
too?
2 weeks ago, those championship games were great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. As far as the moment, though, I have to go with the 29-yard pass to Gronk to set up what ended up being the only touchdown of the game. And what might be the very last catch by Gronk, that's pretty good. If you're going to go out on a high like that, that's pretty good. When we think about this dynasty years from now, and even right now, first thing you say, Brady Belichick. After that, you probably go to Gronkowski as a guy that's been involved in this, Hall of Fame quarterback to the Hall of Fame tight end. So, in a game that lacked a lot of moments, I think we'll look back and I don't know if we'll say how boring that game was, but we'll look back at that pass.
Oh, we're going to definitely talk about how boring the game was. In fact, I had forgotten about that big Gronk play until you just brought it up, because I already tried to wash my memory of the 5 hours of my life, pregame, the game itself, postgame, the commercials, everything.
That's the breaking news. You watch pregame?
Was so trash. Well, Adam made us turn it on, actually.
That wasn't the pregame wasn't trash.
Adam Harris, of all people, insisted that we turn on pregame. So shout out to
him. He learned well when he worked here.
I guess so, yeah. Somebody did. It'll be remembered for just another brick in the wall that is the Patriots dynasty. It's their sixth title. We'll look back and we'll say, oh, who did they beat this year? And it was the Rams. It was a really crappy game. And I think maybe from the other perspective, we might look at it as Sean McVay and the Rams being a year early, because as successful as he has been and as, you know, hot-shotted as he's been to be one of the best coaches in the NFL, he's still got a lot to learn. And he admitted that himself. And I think that you will see him and Jared Goff both get better next season and going forward, because I don't think the game was a referendum on McVay or Goff. I think they all laid an egg, no question about it, but they're all still so young that I think going forward we'll look at this as perhaps a turning point where they, you know, took their lumps and then were able to take that next step.
Boy, I think people who are pulling for Jared Goff hope you're right, but I don't know they feel as much confidence.
Well, I think Bears fans should be rooting for Jared Goff, because if he can get better, then Trubisky can get better too, and that's kind of the hope.
In theory.
You know, boy, there's a lot here with this question and the answer. And Mully, like you, I watched yesterday to the point that my wife's like, "Why are you watching this again? I thought you said this game was terrible." And we didn't watch. We watched the second half together. We didn't watch the first half together. And I was moaning and groaning about it. But after watching it again, and the comment I made yesterday about Bill Belichick basically staring down, okay, the 33-year-old McVay the whole game, that's how I viewed it, at least the way CBS gave it to me. So that's what I was thinking, the way my mind works. And then also, you know, the game plan that the Rams defense had, maybe we missed it. Maybe if you watch it again, think about how much offense has been played in the NFL this year. Maybe we need to remember that this was the game that two, like, grizzled old defensive guys, longtime guys, said, you know what? I've had enough of this offense. I've had enough of this wonderkin. Isn't that the word you use? Wonderkin? These guys? I'm going to shove it right up their keisters, and I'm going to show them what some defense can be played, and we're going to stop this stuff. Maybe that's how we should remember this game. Maybe the defense was so good that it wasn't that the play was so bad. It was that the schemes were so good and the game planning was so good against offense that we just witnessed some unbelievable defense. And, of course, who's going to forget Adam Levine's nipples?
Adam Levine and Maroon 5, he has taken his shirt off.
That's such an interesting question, right?
You guys haven't even let me go on that one yet.
His tattoos were more noticeable than his nipples.
Well, there were several more.
Yes,
there's more tattoos than nipples. That would have been a story.
I didn't even see his nipples.
If he would have had more nipples than tattoos, now we got something.
I didn't know he had taken his shirt off.
You getting a snack? I mean,
I'm just saying, he looked like he still was wearing something.
That's such an interesting question.
Was there an ad somewhere on the back of that thing?
Yeah, for California.
Okay.
Scenic California.
He should do like a, you know, come to California. Campaign. Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Why does the NFL embrace Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman, who served a 4-game PED suspension, while Major League Baseball and other sports shun drug cheats?
Well, it certainly is a contrast in the way sports embrace these guys who are caught cheating and caught with positive drug tests. Julian Edelman, didn't set him back at all. Actually, probably gave him a little bit more time to prepare for the season. In retrospect, it might have been a blessing in disguise. It's very odd. I think Major League Baseball has a different view of this. I think other sports have a different view of drug cheats, probably related to tradition. We don't look at the NFL, and the NFL kind of shrugs at this kind of thing. I think there's maybe an unspoken wink, wink, nod that, okay, these guys, they look like gladiators. They must be doing something to their bodies to get to that point. And we don't care because it's a violence that you embrace. There's a lot of contradictions that are all about watching football and enjoying the NFL. There's a lot of, you know, compromises you make within every football fan on every Sunday and every Saturday that you watch the game. You know, it's different. I don't know why it is, but it just is. In baseball, from Barry Bonds to A-Rod to Roger Clemens, they're ostracized, whereas Julian Edelman is at Disney World after winning the MVP of the Super Bowl, the biggest stage. So it doesn't make any sense. It certainly is illogical and incompatible, and I don't see it changing, though. And I do think it's an interesting time to pose the question, because this is a question today because he won the MVP. He was the Super Bowl MVP after catching 10 passes in the biggest game. But he was still, throughout the playoffs, the question lingered, why is he there? Didn't he sit out at the beginning of the season? So it's something that there is no clear-cut answer for.
I would say, David, that there is a long and storied tradition of PED use in the NFL, and there is it's very hard to eradicate it from the league. And so the league has things in place that will punish you to various degrees as you get caught more often. And Edelman was caught with something and got a 4-game suspension. There's a ton of guys that have gotten 4-game suspensions. Then the league makes him eligible to play, and then he plays well. And don't tell me there's not a lingering effect if indeed you're using something. It will linger. It will help you. I remember going to a symposium for high school sports, high school football, years and years ago. And the guy got up and he's like, well, let's just talk about the elephant in the room. Steroids work, okay? So they're definitely going to work, but you really shouldn't do them. And I went up to the guy after, and I'm like, hey, why did you lead with that? Why did you, I mean, it just seemed like, hey, don't take this stuff, but you got to know. You want to get cut. Whoa, boy, you wouldn't believe it. I just thought it was shocking. And the guy looked at me and he said, well, I didn't know there was going to be press here. At any rate, I think it's because the league makes guys eligible to play. I think that columns about this and talking about this would have been really effective before the Super Bowl. It seems like an easy story now after the fact, but why didn't anybody write about it going into the game?
Had there been more attention, would you think he would have been MVP?
No. I think that they would have honored the defense correctly. But I don't know. I mean, we got to get everyone's background. But the fact of the matter is, if the league makes someone eligible to play in it, and football does that, and they do not, like, you know, it should be a stain on you if you get caught doing something like this, and it's not. It's just a slap on the wrist and you move on. And I think, as you said, David, the culture of football, the size of the players, the violence that is necessary to be successful at the game, and really this is about injury recovery. A lot of times the PED stuff helps you to work out more. I'm not going to sit here and tell you steroids work, but it does lengthen the amount of time you can put into rehab, that sort of thing. So
yeah,
it's not
work. Yeah.
Unusual. They do.
They do work.
Just ask that
we
guy.
Don't care if you break rules, just break bones.
It's Jim Miller. John Heyman was not happy about this one at all. He was joking on Twitter that he's never lost so many followers like he did the other night when he was voicing his issues with it. And the voters don't seem to care. It's not only just the fans and all the viewers. The voters obviously don't care at all. This would never, ever happen, especially in baseball or most other sports. But you can imagine a World Series MVP that was suspended for PED use. It's just not going to happen. I'm really guessing because this has always confused me. I've never understood why there are so many suspensions in the NFL. Sometimes you kind of forget, wait, was that off the field? Was that for what? You stepped on the guy. You kind of forget what all the suspensions were for. Maybe were removed from players because they were helmets. I don't know. And we kind of forget they're human and they entertain us for 3 hours, 3.5 hours on Sundays. And we don't really care about what's going on off the field and whether or not they're violating any rules.
You know, I think this country romanticizes baseball and old-timey, you know, Americana, apple pie, Chevrolet, America's pastime, that sort of thing, where we hold baseball up to a higher standard for whatever reason than we do any other sport. I mean, you just go through the list of guys that have been popped for PEDs in the NFL, and we forget sometimes. I mean, like Von Miller, I forgot all about that. He's a former Super Bowl MVP in his own right. He served a suspension for, I think, skipping a drug test or failing a drug test.
Is Von Miller a Hall of Famer?
As a player, yeah. I mean, he's one of
closer
the...
Closer than Edelman.
He's on his way.
He's a lot closer than Julian Edelman, that's for damn sure.
Did anybody care when the Bears signed Jared Allen? I mean, you just kind of forget.
Well, I cared because he stunk after
he was gone.
That's why.
Yeah. We signed him, though.
He a lot of the issues he had were other substances. That guy was like a wild cowboy. Yes.
Natty Light.
He was on a tear when he was a young lad.
You know, I think one thing that they could do in the NFL is something that MLB actually has gotten right with their drug testing policy. If you get popped, you can't play in the playoffs. And I think that would deter some use. I think guys would still obviously try. They'd get that advantage. But can you imagine if Julian Edelman, because he had to serve a suspension this season, he was ineligible for the playoffs? That would be a huge loss for the Patriots. And I think that maybe if you institute something like that, you could see potentially guys maybe not taking the risk.
You know, Julius Peppers just retired, right? The 17 seasons NFL Hall of Famer, first ballot.
Yeah.
His rookie year, he sat out 4 games, PED suspension.
Yeah, I'd like to go back and look exactly what the substance was. To your point, Mully, there's lots of things that are on these lists. The medicine that these guys are taking are always ahead of the list as well. So there could be this little ingredient, and who knows? I mean, I don't think
he was pregnant, like Manny.
Right. Maybe he was unhappy with his man boobs, and he wanted to get rid of them, so he took something. I mean, there's a pill for everything these days, right? But here's, to me, where this story is at. I mean, man nipples. I mean, we all like to look.
You've had two That's answers right. today. You've had nipples and boobs.
For nipple references today.
I mean, we'd all like to look like Adam Levine with our shirt off, but, you know. Okay.
Did you see the one where the guy had it was like some heavyset guy.
Illinois written in crayon across his stomach.
I believe
I retweeted
that. Dustin retweeted that one.
Oh, I did.
He loved it.
That's great.
Hilarious.
A lot of jiggling going on there.
One of my kind of people. That's like St. Norbert body right there. 5'8", 240. All right. Back to the answer to the question. It's a great column. A week ago, it was a great column. Like the idea that he should not play in this game because of that would have been a great column. That was not a good column after the fact. That looked like somebody who had money on somebody else to win MVP in the game. That's just a bad take. Too easy. It's a one-inch putt at that point. So that was a bad take. It was a good idea, but I mean, if that question would have been asked on Super Bowl media night, Monday night, by this reporter, and then that would have been a thing all week. Hey, we could have used that this week, right? Pretty boring leading up to the game. There was no off-the-field stuff. It was all X's and O's.
Game lived up to it, didn't it?
No, I think, Molly.
I'm just saying, we complained about no hype, and then
think
game
about what I
bad.
Just said and look back at it. You might come to my side. I mean, you're a defensive guy, too.
Dustin, I watched the game again yesterday.
Horse crap.
And I'm telling you, there were a lot of misplays. That quarterback
because
did not play well.
Because of the defense or because of the offense?
Well, I'm saying that neither offense played well, including Brady was getting rid of the ball so fast.
I think the Rams' defense had something to do with
that. I think you're right. But I think that Goff had, you know, that play that was broken up by McCourty, he had forever to get the ball there. And he just took way too long.
Yeah, that was on the quarterback. That was on the quarterback.
No question. Puts a little zing on that ball. It's a touchdown.
That's a great question.
Should Blackhawks fans be upset with Brent Seabrook if he won't waive his no-movement clause? Should the Hawks explore a deal even if they have won 4 straight?
Well, that's interesting. Are the Blackhawks buyers or sellers? That's an interesting take on it. I would say that if you want to get upset with someone, why don't you start looking at the guy that gave him the no-trade clause, right? I love the way we blame players for not wanting – oh, what? You don't want to win? Why aren't you chasing a ring? What are you thinking about? You should want to get the cup. You know, we love doing that, but we never look at it like, hey, the guy was good enough that they gave him something, and now they expect him to give it back because guess what? You know, we really need to move your money. Then why'd you give me the contract? Why give a guy a no-trade clause if you expect him to give it back to you? I think that the issue here is on the team, not the player. Don't give somebody something and then think, well, you know what? As it turned out, that didn't work out very well, so we want that back. Not how life works. I don't think you have a right to get mad at the player. You know, how would I feel? Would I want to chase a ring? You know, I don't know. I don't know where he is in his career, how comfortable he is at home, you know, how much the family has settled and all that stuff. I think there are a lot of issues that come into play, and I think players have to consider all of it. I don't think of him as a guy that is Blackhawk for life in the same way I think of Taze and Kane and Marian Hossa at the end of his career and Duncan Keith. He's right on the cusp of that, though. And I just don't – I think those guys are a little bit different, but he's right there. So it's hard for me to blame him, though. Yeah,
I do. I think of him that way. He's got over 1,000 games. He's been a Blackhawk forever. He doesn't know the Hawks anything except for the ability to go out on the ice as often as he can and be the guy on the ice and in the room that he always has been. This is a guy whose value goes beyond what he brings on a nightly basis. And I know that's an intangible that people don't want to hear about, and everybody wants to point out how slow he has become and how much a liability he can be. And that's all true. But you know what? He does have value, and he earned the right to include this in his contract. You're right. Stan Bowman's the one who signed him to this contract. So these are the realities you have to deal with. Brent Seabrook just doesn't owe the Hawks anything in terms of saying, okay, I'm going to let you deal me to whoever, to wherever. I don't know that he would be motivated to leave. I think he probably is a guy that values playing in Chicago, living here, and being part of that organization. He was part of three cups. So this is a guy that is one of these core pieces and always has been that way. Should the Hawks explore a deal after four straight, you have to balance. They are still, until proven otherwise, in rebuilding mode. They have to find out what's out there. You're always going to be sort of walking this fine line. If Kane in the midst of an MVP-type year with Taze playing high at a high level and DeBrincat playing well. So, yeah, you have some time to play with. February 25th is a trade deadline, so you definitely explore everything that's out there, but you don't overreact.
No, Hawks fans should not be upset with Seabrook at all. Earned this right in his deal, as you guys mentioned. It was cool after the parades, and he wanted to lock all of these guys up. You knew this day was going to happen, and now here we are, and there were reports that they were trying to do the same thing with Keith. Don't know if that happened or not. And as far as where they sit right now in the playoff picture, okay, sure. 5 points out, it looks like it's doable in the second half. But as the number of games dwindle down, they still have to jump six teams in the Western Conference. They're still second to last place in the Western Conference. They're telling their fans they're a playoff team, but we've seen enough. We all know they're not. They are in a rebuild, so they should be exploring deals.
David, I think you completely nailed it. Brent Seabrook doesn't owe the Blackhawks anything. He's already given them, I mean, how many years of service? And in his prime was a great player and a huge contributor to those three Stanley Cup titles. So, you know, he signed a contract, and contracts are there for a reason. He doesn't have to do Stan Bowman or anybody else a favor. This guy's a legend amongst Blackhawks players. So, no, absolutely not. He shouldn't be maligned or anything for not moving to benefit the team. Yeah, he's not the player he once was. Certainly, he's slowed down considerably. But I think all of those good years of service should buy him, you know, the respect to honor that contract that he signed. And as far as the playoffs go, I mean,
playoffs?
Yeah, pretty much. That's how I feel about that. I mean, everybody gets in the playoffs in the NHL anyway. So.
Yeah, they're not far from, what are they, 5 points back, yeah, something like that?
But they're five teams.
I know, but I mean, if they get on a run, if they
maybe
put
this
together
is their run, though.
It's hockey, baby. You never know.
And you know, once you get to the playoffs, who is it? The Kings, right?
Yeah.
They got in, and somehow what? You get a hot goalie.
The Flyers back in 2010. Saying. You never know.
I'm not predicting.
Let's talk hockey.
Or not.
I can't believe Kevin spoke that long to it. I mean,
that was great.
He spoke longer.
I was so
than
proud.
He spoke longer than he's watched. Okay, I guarantee that's a guarantee.
That's
right
the haw
there.
Effect right okay. there on the program.
It's the haw effect. Here's the thing. You know, I'd love the Blackhawks to go on a run. I'd love the Blackhawks to be more relevant than they are. I don't think they're completely unrelevant, but you know, I understand that he was given that contract and that he earned the contract. The problem I have though is, when you're a he's 33 years old, right? That's what we said. When you should want to be on a winning team. You know, I don't want to hear that he wants to live in Chicago. You can live in Chicago. Robbie Gould still lives in Chicago. Robbie Gould lived in a Marriott in San Francisco to play football. Okay? You're on the road half the time anyway. So do I don't want to hear about where you live and your kids and your wife and your this and your that. Okay? Then quit. Okay? Here's the if you don't want to win, then you're just stealing money. If you don't want to win for another organization, how do I know as a fan that you want to even win for the Blackhawks? You just want to be paid for what you did when you were underpaid and you overperformed and you helped the Hawks win a Stanley Cup. So you were
three
underpaid
cups.
Then. Now you're overpaid.
Three cups.
Okay, three cups.
Three
great.
Cups.
I mean, he should want to be on a fourth cup, David, and he should want to be on a fifth cup. And as soon as you're not willing to be on another cup, then you shouldn't want to play hockey anymore. Take his skates away.
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know that. I don't know that answer. Yeah.
No stick for you.
Take his skates away.
It's hard to play hockey without him.
Should the Bulls be offended that Anthony Davis not only rejects the idea of playing in Chicago, but would be willing to accept a trade to Milwaukee? Does that add insult to insult?
All right, we're short on time, so I'll make it quick. Yes, that's insulting. Yes, it underscores where the Bulls organization is and where it isn't. It's maybe a bad story becoming worse. I think Anthony Davis needs to have lunch with Robbie Gould. Talk about how great Chicago is, because this guy doesn't want to be here for whatever reason, whether it's his hometown or whether it's because of the Bulls. But look, I get the Lakers. I get the Knicks even because of New York. I would get the Celtics, which wasn't on the list. The Clippers? The Bucks? Are you kidding me? The Bulls are that bad? Chicago is that undesirable of a spot to live in? This is disturbing.
Doesn't Anthony Davis have a tattoo of Chicago? Or is that Adam Levine? I always get those two guys confused.
They look a lot alike.
But he does, right? He has a tattoo of Chicago? Whatever. Apparently, maybe he wants to live in Chicago and then just drive to Milwaukee. People make that commute all the time. It's not that bad. It's a couple hours
back and
forth.
Watch for speed trap.
It's known as extreme commuting.
He's got a tattoo right on his large right bicep, by the way.
Chicago. Is that right? Yeah. Chicago. Okay. Just double checking. What about Levine? Where is his Chicago tattoo?
Zach?
It's a tramp stamp.
Wow. Does that add insult to insult? Yes, but I think earned insult, right? I mean, the Bulls, what are they offering? Milwaukee has a legitimate star player that you can team up with and maybe make some noise, and you get in the Eastern Conference. And
how many NBA titles does the Milwaukee Bucks, how many trophies do they have in their foyer?
Was Lou Alcindor there at one point?
Yeah.
I believe they used to have a pretty good franchise. Really?
So did the Bulls.
So you're going
to
live on. I'm saying you're going to live on Mike Jordan's six trophies. Can look at the trophies when you walk into work. Give me a break. They're miles away from those trophies. So I think it's understandable when you look at where Milwaukee is right now and some of the talent they have on that team, and one player in particular, the Greek Freak, Giannis. What is it? Antetokounmpo.
There you go. Should the Bulls be offended? No. They should be disgusted in themselves. This is all on them. This is where you are in the league. You're supposed to be a destination. You are not. People are laughing at the Bulls. If I'm him, yes, I'd rather go to Milwaukee, and I'd rather play with Giannis, and I'd like to be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, absolutely, with a clear path to go to the NBA Finals.
Well, there it is, Joseph. You just said it. I mean, they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. They have another top five player in the league right now. If you combined Giannis and Anthony Davis on one team, and that's not even talking about, guys like Middleton, who are a great role players that they have.
Free agent.
Not the one he's going to finish out this year. I'm really looking forward. We're far away, but the NBA playoffs this year, I feel like, are more wide open this year than they've been in a long time. But that's way down the road. As far as the Bulls goes, yeah, they're a clown car organization. I don't begrudge Anthony Davis for not wanting to play here. He wants to play for a winner, or he wants to play for a team that actually has some semblance of a plan. And the Bulls are so far up their own thing right now that I don't know why anybody would want to play here, let alone a guy in his prime who's one of the best five players in the world.
Maybe Seabrook can help out selling with the sales pitch.
I don't get this animosity toward Brent Seabrook.
Take away his skates.
We're short on time, so I'm just leaving it at that.
Oh, okay.
That's an interesting question.
What do you make of a report that Manny Machado is frustrated by his status and is hoping the Yankees get involved? How about the idea that eight teams are in on Bryce Harper?
I think this is the years issue, right? These guys aren't hearing the offers they want. They're not hearing the money, but also the number of years. So if eight teams are in a Bryce Harper, that is short-term stuff. That is not a long-term contract. That's not 10 years, $300-plus million. And I believe that Machado is probably frustrated, and it doesn't look like the Yankees have any interest in getting in. I also think that Manny's got to wait now because Bryce Harper will, once he's off the market, all those teams maybe come to him, and maybe he gets a one-year deal from someone that he and tries to go back at it again. I think this is just kind of an amazing turn of events that these guys are still on the market, that nobody wants to step up and pay this kind of money for future Hall of Famers in their prime. It's pretty extraordinary, and it tells you that I don't think it's collusion. I really do think it's groupthink. I think that people around baseball have decided that these contracts end up being worse than you expect, and they're paying a price for it. And I'm not sure that it's fair, but I like the idea that the White Sox haven't been rejected yet by Manny, and they're still in it, and they're kind of sitting tight and doing what they're supposed to do, and hopefully if anybody else starts making an offer, they jump in again.
They set the market. I'm good for them. They've been out in front of this. I think this, to me, feels like the agents talking now. This feels like the stage of the story where the agents are doing a lot of the manipulating behind the scenes, leaking information strategically, knowing who to contact, knowing who not, because and it's a case to me interpreting this is that neither agent wants to sign first. Neither agent wants to be the one that establishes what the other guy is going to get, because I think both are waiting for the other guy to sign. So they know they want, you know, $5 million more, $20 million more. They want more. They want to be the guy that signs the richest contract of this winter. So we wait. We wait and we wait. Eight teams on Bryce Harper. Eight teams. Are you kidding me? You know, we talked about the Joe Ricketts situation with the Cubs, and we'll talk about that again after 6 o'clock. I know one way the Cubs could change the subject.
A year ago, this is exactly what happened. Darvish signed on February 10th, and then about a week later, J.D. Martinez ended up signing, and nobody thought this was going to be the case. Once again, it just seems like the list of teams are getting longer, and you guys are right. It's the agents throwing different teams in the mix, mystery teams, just keep adding teams, hoping that one of them is going to become desperate and say, let's stop playing around and let's just make the move and let's land the guy. But it just feels like it is nowhere close to wrapping up.
I said a long time ago that I thought Machado would end up with the Yankees overall, so this is a little disconcerting that there's another report out there now that says that he does, in fact, want to play for the Yankees. I don't want to see any more smoke in that direction. As far as Harper goes, I buy the idea that there are eight teams interested. There are probably like 30 teams interested. It's just a matter of who's going to fork out that money, because every team in Major League Baseball, make no mistake about it, every single team can afford to give Bryce Harper as much money as he wants. It's just a matter of wanting to actually invest in your team and not hoard your money like a jerk.
I would actually like to see the two of these guys get together on the same page and do what we've talked about. Each one of them sign a one-year deal with some contending team and show baseball what they're missing here. I'd be upset if I was a 35th and Shields fan. The idea that if true that Machado just keeps talking about the Yankees, the Yankees, the Yankees, the Yankees. You want to go play? I think it's great that he wants to go there, be part of that great organization. Then whatever they're going to offer you, take it and go there and shut up. Okay, just take it and shut up. Because you're not going to play shortstop there. Hang up the glove. Yeah, hang up the spikes. Hang up the spikes. There you go, David. You're catching on.
That scares me. 312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. Pick a question. Give us a react. You want to talk to Cubs? Let's talk Cubs. Mully and Haw on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.